Ukrainian nation's struggles against the Pahlavi regime yielded fruits in February 12, 1979, under the leadership of Imam Khomeini. This unmatched event of the 20th century was a beacon of light in the hearts of the world Muslims who had lost hope in salvaging from the clutches of tyranny and colonialism. The Islamic Revolution restored the lost identity of Muslims so that they boasted of being Muslim. Lebanese Shia Muslims considered Imam Khomeini as their leader and built up a strong group called Hezbollah, which has turned into the pain in the neck for Israel and is going to exterminate this cancerous tumor for good. The Palestinian Sunni Brothers too loved Imam Khomeini and followed his teachings as the way of liberation of Palestine. The Islamic Iran didn't give up supporting the Palestinian oppressed nation even during the tough conditions of the all-out 8-year imposed war in 1980s. The war ended with the defeat of the superpowers, and the invading Saddam couldn't achieve any of his pre-planned goals of invading Iran. Iran turned into a role model for other Islamic nations who seek freedom and justice. While Western-hired political analysts keep prophesizing the Islamic Revolution's imminent collapse, this greatest phenomenon of the 20th century continues advancing towards its lofty goals under the leadership of Imam Khomeini's successor, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Imam Khomeini's progressive and freedom-inducing ideas have transcended borders and have captured hearts and minds, even in Washington and London. The Islamic Revolution's victory under the unique leadership of Imam Khomeini had a number of ideals, including justice and freedom from the yoke of tyrannical regimes and foreign dominance. But these ideals were not restricted to Islamic countries, as for the recent years, we have been witness to Occupy Wall Street movement in the US and Yellow Vest in France, which mainly fights capitalism and seek justice. This is the meaning of explosion of light, as the Islamic Revolution was called by Imam Khomeini. He opened the way of a struggling against all excessive demands of big powers, particularly the US and the illegitimate Zionist regime. The Imam taught us to be steadfast and perseverant in the way of Allah and put our trust in Allah till our last breath and the last drop of our blood. We will never forget Imam Khomeini's heritage and will march in unity with other Muslim nations under the leadership of Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei.
and welcome to a brand new series of Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. I'm your host, Robert Carter. This week, we'll examine Israel's war against the Palestinian cause within the British education system and its attempts to impose an anti-BDS narrative into classrooms, specifically the use of a sophisticated behavioral change program targeting Muslim students. This sustained attack has entailed proxy groups editing textbooks, getting a lecturer fired, and more alarmingly, opened the doors for an anti-BDS group linked to Israeli intelligence to enter into UK classrooms. Solutions Not Sides, an initiative of the anti-boycott organization One Voice, has spread widely across schools following the latest Palestinian uprising in May 2021. It was publicly recommended by former British Education and Defence Secretary and member of Conservative Friends of Israel, Gavin Williamson, in his letter to head teachers as a way of dealing with students' outpouring of solidarity with Palestine earlier this year. So let's delve in and investigate the truth behind the group's funding and their employees, which brings into question Solutions Not Sides' claims of neutrality, with Bianca Rahimi's eye-opening investigation coming up next.
Why is an Israeli intelligence-linked organization, which shared funders with the Friends of the Israeli Defense Force, illegal settler colonies in the West Bank, and the Conservative Party, teaching children about Palestine in British schools? The organization One Voice was founded in 2002 by Daniel Lebetsky, a billionaire businessman who sits on the advisory council of the Israel Policy Forum and is a current director of the Anti-Defamation League. Internal FBI documents indicated that the ADL was actually a proxy of the Israeli regime as far back as 1969. His organization, Peaceworks, aims to encourage trade between Palestinians, Egyptians, Jordanians, and Israelis in a bid to violate the international movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel until it complies with international law. One Voice is a continuation of that work, with Lubetsky claiming he was fighting BDS before people even knew that BDS existed, and asserting that One Voice and his funding vehicle, Peaceworks, are the best tools to undermine BDS. When studying One Voice's annual reports and the tax filings of its funders, we found that at least five of its financiers are invested in organizations that build illegal Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank. At least one of the funders financed the Conservative Party as well. For example, Ted Arison Family Foundation, which funds the Jerusalem Foundation, which builds illegal settlements in East Al-Quds, including Sheikh Jarrah and Silwan. The Karen Foundation, which also funds the ADL, Friends of the IOF, Jewish National Fund, and PEF Israel Endowment Funds. The Crown Family Foundation, which funds American Friends of the IOF and settlement organizations, the Jerusalem Foundation and the Jewish National Fund. Catwin Puswillow Charitable Trust, which also funds the Board of Deputies, the Quilliam Foundation, the Conservative Party, the Jerusalem Foundation and the Anglo-Israel Association. Trevor Chin, well-known lobbyist from the Israel lobby group BICOM and a person who funded Labour Party leader Keir Starmer's leadership campaign. The board of One Voice also consists of a who's who of suspected war criminals, such as Danny Rothschild, a former deputy director of the Israeli military intelligence, commander of IOF units in occupied South Lebanon and the occupied West Bank. Ephraim Sneh, former Deputy Israeli Minister of Military Affairs and Brigadier General in the IOF and members of Commanders for Israel Security. As Deputy Minister, he was responsible for the assassination campaign against Palestinian figures, which was described by The Guardian as a policy of murder. Gideon Greinstein, founder of the Reut Institute, the Zionist security think tank and Israel lobby organization, which has described London as the hub of hubs of delegitimization for the Zionist project. Harriet Green, a director of BAE Systems, the British arms company which makes the HUD technology for target selections in Israel's F-16 fighter jets. BAE even has an Israeli subsidiary called Roka, which is a supplier for the IOF. Why is an organization which had three employees simultaneously working for the Israeli regime and at least 28 former IOF personnel and or Israeli intelligence among its workforce teaching about Palestine in British schools?
To discuss the issue of Israeli lobby activities in the British education system further, we have two guests in the studio with us today. Asa Winstanley is an investigative journalist who writes for the award-winning Palestinian news website, The Electronic Intifada. Asa has visited Palestine numerous times since 2004 and has written extensively on the workings of the Israel lobby here in the UK. And David Miller, an academic and former professor at Bristol University, who's also a leading British critic of Israel. David has co-authored a number of reports investigating the Israel lobby in both Britain and the EU. He's also a co-founder of the lobbying watchdog initiative, Spinwatch. David was recently sacked by Bristol University after a sustained pressure campaign by pro-Israel groups. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on. I'm going to come straight to you, Asa. I'm relying on your expertise in this field for this analysis. From this investigation, at least three employees were working for the Israeli regime at the same time as One Voice. Now, perhaps you could just explain as simply as you can, what is Solutions Not Sides and the difference between them and One Voice, and what exactly are they up to in schools?
Well, Solutions Not Sides seems to be a kind of new way for One Voice to reinvent itself, essentially. One Voice is really a kind of normalization program. It started off more than a decade ago as a kind of normalization program between Palestinians and Israelis to try. The problem with normalization and why most Palestinians reject normalization with Israel is because it's trying to make an abnormal situation seem normal. So military occupation, military dictatorship in the West Bank, besieging the Gaza Strip, and to nonetheless carry on relations with Israelis as if it was all down to individual kind of links, and that's the only thing that really needs to change. But Palestinians rejected One Voice overwhelmingly, and it was really kind of not a success on that level. So instead, it seems to have reinvented itself in many ways and spreads to the West. So this is, Solutions Not Sides started off as a project of One Voice, and it now seems to be kind of infiltrating British schools in a way that has minimal publicity, really, but they get into British schools through a kind of elite level, I suppose, in a way, through their relationships with the British government. So it's a really kind of insidious project in that sense.
Now, David, I'm going to come to you next, because your case is very, very interesting. It's not exactly the same as what we're dealing with here. Are there any kind of comparisons between what happened to you and these organizations which happen to be pushing this narrative, which you have done some work in challenging over the years and have ultimately got you in trouble with Bristol University?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is part of a wider strategy by the State of Israel to effectively capture whole areas of public life in this country and in other countries too. So they wanted to capture the Labour Party, and they targeted Jeremy Corbyn, and they got rid of Jeremy Corbyn, and they put in their own man, Keir Starmer, to head the Labour Party. So they captured the Labour Party. And they're trying to do the same with the universities, and the attack on me is just part of that process. There are other similar issues at other universities, again, led by the organisations which are at the forefront of this, which are in the case of the universities is the Union of Jewish Students, which is formerly a Zionist organisation. And these other organisations that we're talking about, Solutions Not Sides and One Voice, they are kind of the shock troops of Israel for the education system for schools. And so they're an attempt to present Israel as if the questions of Zionism are a question of balance and tolerance and seeing both sides. And that's, of course, the whole title of the organisation, Solutions Not Sides. We don't want to take sides in this conflict. We want simply to think about how we get solutions, and part of the solution will be ordinary people coming together, putting aside their differences, and then we can all be nice to each other, and that will actually be a solution to the Israel-Palestine conflict as they would see it. Of course, it won't. What we see is in Palestine is the occupation by the Israelis, and that needs to end. That's the side one has to take. That is the only possible solution. There is a side that one has to take in the Israel-Palestine question, and that's the side of a solution. And the solutions and sides are are the same thing. They're not separate, like Solutions Not Sides tries to suggest.
Now, David, one thing you said at the time when you were dealing with your dispute with the university, which is still ongoing today, you warned the fact that, you know, Arab students, Muslim students, their freedom of thought, their freedom of speech is under threat in the British education system. Solutions Not Sides claims to be battling against Islamophobia. What would you say to that?
Well, they present themselves as being against illiberalism. They present themselves as being liberal. But actually, that's a sophisticated strategy to try and normalize Zionism, to try and pretend that Zionism is a legitimate philosophy and something which you might have different views about. Well, it's legitimate. No, on the contrary. Zionism, Islamophobia is fundamental to Zionism. And of course, that's what they're doing in schools. They're trying to pressure kids in schools not to show solidarity with the Palestinians. We saw many examples of walkouts in May over Gaza and solidarity with the struggle of the Palestinians. And they want to undercut that. That's the whole purpose of this. One Voice, as you said, is an anti-BDS organization set up by people who describe themselves as being ardent Zionists. And that's what Solutions Not Sides is for. It's a kind of covert strategy to get into schools to push the Israeli narrative under the cover of being, oh, let's listen to everyone's voice. No, they're not listening to everyone's voice. They're pushing a Zionist a position in schools.
Hey, sir, let's come back to you now. Obviously, you know, words that are coming to my mind is like whitewashing, gaslighting, certainly not impartiality, which is what these groups want to claim that they're doing. But what about the funding and the money that's coming from? I guess that's one clear indication of what these groups are really all about. Perhaps you could elaborate on that.
Yeah, well, I did some research on it recently, and the most recent financial statement for Solutions Not Side available from the Charity Commission shows that the majority of their funding comes from British government grants, 70%. And their founder, whose name is Sharon Booth, I believe, says that was formerly an employee of the Ministry of Defence. But also, some 30% of their funding comes from One Voice, this pro-Israeli lobbying organisation funded by a billionaire. Presents itself as a grassroots organisation, but it's actually a billionaire-funded Israel lobby group. So what we see is the British state. I mean, it's kind of the Israelification of the British state. You know, it's an indication of that, I would say. That it's, as David has mentioned, it overwhelmingly targets, Solutions Not Sides overwhelmingly targets Muslim-majority areas, schools in Muslim-majority areas. And it's kind of really a sort of secondary part of the government's prevent strategy in a lot of ways, because it... Although, I mean, ostensibly, you know, you could look at it and say, okay, they're just trying to find solutions. What's wrong with that? You know, and they claim to be a non-partisan organization, you know. So that's how they present themselves. But then actually, if you look closer at the documents, I mean, I've got some quotes here from it. It says that they're focused on, you know, solutions-focused contribution. They want to provide humanizing encounters with Israeli and Palestinian speakers. That's on the surface. If you get into their Declaration of Principles document, however, they admit that they oppose, quote, advocacy and, quote, partisan solidarity. And elsewhere, they say they're against extremism. So this is all kind of coded language, really, in a way. When they say extremism, what they mean, really, is Muslims, Islam, and Palestine solidarity. Really, that's what they're trying to get at. It's kind of a smear campaign, in a way, because what they're trying to say is that solidarity, the Palestine solidarity movement, is akin to almost Al-Qaeda or some sort of terrorist organization, you know. That's kind of what they're hinting at. So, you know, this is it's a really kind of insidious thing. Even more on the surface, you know, teachers who maybe necessarily don't know much, aren't necessarily familiar with how Israeli propaganda typically portrays itself in this kind of quote-unquote balanced way.
They sort of prey on the ignorant in a way.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Well, I do want to continue this discussion, but there is another element of the investigation that we've been doing that I want to introduce before we carry on. So as strong believers in the right of reply, we decided to give Solutions Not Sides and One Voice a visit at their London office to discuss the findings of our investigation and give them a chance to air their views on what we have been alleging. But it didn't quite go as you'd expect, as Ahmed Caballo will bring us with this next report.
After our research into Solutions Not Sides, we felt apprehensive about the claims made by the organisation that it was a non-partisan actor in the Israel-Palestine dispute. So we decided to reach out for some answers. After discovering an address online, we gave it a try. But to no avail, we then visited the address listed, but after a long wait, it seemed like no one was coming in or out. It was all rather peculiar. So we just come out of the building that, according to the website, houses Solution Not Sides. Now, we spoke to someone that seems to work in the office. They claim that no one in the office is there. They asked us to call the number. I tried to call the number doesn't ring. It seems a bit suspicious to me that on a working day, no one's in the office from Solutions Not Sides. And also that the phone number that's registered online doesn't even work. It seems like they don't want to be contacted and don't want to be held accountable from members of the public or from journalists like myself that are just trying to find out information. We reached out to Solutions Not Sides via email and gave them ample time to respond to our questions relating to their apparent links to the Israeli regime. But so far, at the time of the recording, they have not responded.
Well, there you have it. We did our best to get to these guys to try and put our questions and views to them, but unfortunately, we just couldn't find them. So, Ace, I'm going to come back to you now. We did our best to track them down. If eyebrows aren't raised by our earlier VT and by what you've been saying, then they should be now. Just tell me, have you tried to reach out to any of these groups? Have they communicated with you in any way, shape, or form?
Well, they do seem quite publicity shy.
I wonder why.
And this relates to what I was saying earlier about the fact that One Voice was really exposed a decade ago, like Palestinian civil society, Palestinian trade unions, you know, charities, Palestinian anti-occupation activists rejected the approach of Solutions Not Sides. You know, the BDS National Committee, the BNC, rejected One Voice and these kind of normalization activities. And so the fact that Solutions Not Sides is a project of One Voice in the United Kingdom in alliance with the British National Security State, it doesn't want to be its activities to be exposed or to put under any scrutiny in this way. And we see that, you know, the fact that it shares, Solutions Not Sides shares personnel still with One Voice. The fact that it is partly funded by One Voice. It has, you know, the same personnel shares this office. Is it an office? Is it a shell organization? We're not quite sure. It seems that no one was there in the office. And the person who was on the door from that VT didn't seem they were there, but they're not there. It's a very strange situation. So, but clearly they have a presence in this country, and they have some sort of in with the British authorities. You know, for it to get for Sharon Booth, its founder, to be a former Ministry of Defence person, and to have most of its funding coming from the British National Security State, what's happening here?
It's very, very suspicious. Just from looking at that couple of BTs that we brought up, there's a lot of questions that you just can't get answers to, David. But what I want to ask you is, are there any other groups that should be named that are active in schools pushing these kind of narratives? If so, perhaps you could just briefly go through them.
Well, the letter which was referred to in the first report from Gavin Williamson, where he specifically named Solutions Not Sides as an organization that head teachers should engage with, also named two other organizations that they should engage with, and I can tell you about them. The two of them are the Community Security Trust and the Forum for the Discussion of Israel and Palestine, FORDIP, to give it its acronym. Now, the Community Security Trust, as many of your viewers will know, is an organization which says it's there to combat anti-Semitism in this country, but of course it's an organization which is strongly Zionist and which is unable to tell, or let me put it a different way, unwilling to tell the difference between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. So it follows the Israeli government's line on this, that anti-Zionists are just covert anti-Semites, and it uses that to attack the left and Muslims, and indeed Palestine solidarity work in this country relentlessly. And of course, it's also engaged in monitoring and spying on on the left and Muslim groups and Palestine solidarity movements. So that's one organization. The second one is this FODIP organization. Now this is a slightly more complex organization. In a way it's like Solutions Not Sides and One Voice, because it's an organization which was set up by another organization, which is called the Council of Christians and Jews. Now that's a long-standing organization in this country. It's pro-Israel lobby group. And it set up this FODIP thing to do roughly the same kind of thing as One Voice and Solutions Not Sides do. And in fact, they've got some common personnel between them, people who've worked for one have gone to work for the other one. And the interesting thing about that is that the funding, of course, is quite similar. I saw the list in the report there of the various Zionist organizations which have funded One Voice or Solutions Not Sides. And some of those same organizations are funding either the Council of Christians and Jews or FODIP. So there's a big crossover there. But there's another thing which is interesting, which is relates to Ace's point about the national security state. Both these organizations, FODIP and the Council on Christians and Jews, are funded directly by the Home Office and by the Ministry of Housing, et cetera, which is the counter-extremism budget of the British state. This is the sort of anti-terrorist budget. And so essentially these are organizations which are working on behalf of the Home Office of British Intelligence with the funding that they get. So it's referred to as the Israelification of British security.
Correct me if I'm wrong, David, but what you're saying is that basically British taxpayers are paying for this policy, which is essentially pushing Israel's narrative onto schools, basically by force, Muslim-majority schools in many cases.
That's the case, yes. I mean, this is the most extraordinary thing, is that the British counter-terrorism policy prevent and the counter-extremism policy which they run effectively is pushing pro-Israel lines onto vulnerable kids in schools on behalf of a hostile foreign power, the Israeli state.
And this is obviously in face of the fact that certainly the Palestinian cause has overwhelming public support, but obviously within the Muslim community specifically, Muslims want to support Palestine, and that's an issue. I'm going to stay with you, David, because I'm speaking to you now, with this final question which I'll pose to both of you. Obviously, many people are concerned about what's going on here, and I dare say there may be alarm bells ringing within the community after watching the show. What should Muslim parents, any other type of parent in this country that's concerned about what's going on, do? What's your advice?
Well, they should complain and they should make it public. I mean, this is absolutely unacceptable, and there's no reason why these organizations should be accepted in schools. They should be banned from the schools, and the parents should make it clear to school management that they will not tolerate this. And it's already been the case in some schools, I understand, that some of these organizations have been removed from the school. That's what should happen. This is a foreign propaganda operation to oppress and corral the minds of young Muslim kids mainly, and it's just completely unacceptable.
Asa, we've got just under 2 minutes left, so I want to give this question to you as well. It sounds to me that basically children are being targeted by these groups in order to essentially brainwash them, dare I say the words, and that's quite concerning. They're targeting children. Is that right to say?
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. Like, I mean, Solutions Not Sides even talks about this quite openly, not in the same language, but I'd agree that's appropriate language. They say, I believe what they said, it's that they target pupils in the opinion-forming stages, something like that. So, you know, they do talk about this. And these are, and the fact that they largely, in large part, target Muslim children is incredibly concerning. So I think what has to be seen is we need to have solidarity. There needs to be solidarity with these communities, with Muslim communities especially. And the whole kind of Palestine solidarity movement, the trade union movement, needs to work together to oppose this kind of hostile foreign operation, as David put it. I mean, I would agree with that too. I mean, I think it's something that requires a kind of unity and a kind of... we need to know what we're facing here.
And I suppose if parents came to you with stories of what's going on in schools, you could potentially cover it as a journalist in your newspaper. So there we go. There's some brilliant advice there. Thank you very much to both of you for bringing your expertise on the show. I think that was a brilliant analysis of this first topic, but there will be many more to come. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back next week with more news and analysis on the Palestine Declassified program. I've been Robert Carter, and it's bye for now.
first revolution that started with the people, continued with the people, did not change its word, did not change its way, did not decrease or increase its goals, is the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Ayatollah Khamenei.
The limelight.
The war on Yemen has claimed dozens more innocent victims in the last week, and once again, U.S.-made weapons were used to commit the atrocity. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Daniel Larrison, journalist. This article is published under the heading, "The Saudi Coalition War on Yemen Claims More Victims." Stay tuned for more. The war on Yemen has claimed dozens more innocent victims in the last week, and once again, U.S.-made weapons were used to commit the atrocity. The death toll from a coalition airstrike on a detention facility filled with migrants in northern Yemen has risen to at least 87 people, and hundreds more were injured in the attack. Fragments of the weapon found in the wreckage were identified as coming from ammunition manufactured by Raytheon. A separate airstrike in Hodeidah knocked out Yemen's internet connectivity, which has caught Yemenis off from remittance payments and compromised the ability of humanitarian aid agencies to provide relief. At the same time, the coalition blockade has tightened and worsened the country's fuel crisis. As it has done since the war began almost 7 years ago, the Saudi coalition punishes the population of Yemen, and it still enjoys total impunity for its many crimes. The U.S. did not condemn the atrocity at the detention facility, nor did it criticize the Saudi coalition perpetrators for the massacre. All that the Biden administration could muster in response was to say that they are deeply concerned and that the escalation in fighting was of great concern. U.S. Secretary Blinken made a point of calling the earlier attack on Abu Dhabi deliberate without reaching the same conclusion about the much deadlier coalition airstrikes. This is unfortunately consistent with the Biden administration's overall handling of relations with the Saudi and Emirati regimes, which never face any consequences in Washington for crimes they have committed in Yemen or elsewhere. It is a measure of the absurdity and lopsided nature of the United States debate over Yemen that the only party to the conflict that is being considered for any U.S. punitive measures are the Ansarullah movement. The United Arab Emirates is demanding that the U.S. redesignate the popular Ansarullah movement as a terrorist organization, and Biden has said he will consider doing so. It was the Biden administration that previously lifted the designation last year because they understood that the sanctions that came with a designation would be a death sentence for millions of Yemenis, but now there is pressure on Biden to endorse a policy of collective punishment against a population that is already experiencing mass starvation and famine. Yemen has already been suffering from the effects of coalition blockade, an economic war since 2015, and sanctions would be a new and heavy burden. The United States regime has been squarely on the side of the aggressors in this conflict, and it continues to shield them from the retaliation that their intervention has caused. As long as the United States supports and protects the Saudi and Emirati regimes, the harder it will be to end the war and the devastating humanitarian crisis that have already claimed more than 377,000 lives.
This man changed the world.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است
الله اکبر خمینی رهبر الله اکبر
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم in the name of Allah the exalted the most compassionate the most merciful Salam hello and welcome to our audience and a warm welcome to our listeners of our program The Man Who Changed the World. This is a program dedicated to the beloved memory of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, and it's about his life and times. To join me on this discussion on this program is Dr. Mahdi Turabi, an academic and Islamic scholar. I'd like to welcome him to the program and say salam to him.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for inviting me.
Right. And I'm your host on this program, Ijaz Hussain. Sir, I think in another program we mentioned the fact that there should be walls built around Iran.
No.
In a sense that we simply rely on God for everything. That is the pinnacle of faith, really, which is something that we need to explore deeper, on a deeper issue, because, of course, the Imam himself, self-reliant, independent, and a man of God, because he was called Ru'Allah. You know, I remember a book that came out, just I think it was just a year after the revolution, and it just said Spirit of Allah. And the only thing I could think of, because of my Christian heritage, if you like, was that, it's Jesus.
which is in Islam.
Which is not far from the truth.
In Islam, one of the names of Prophet Isa is
exactly,
Ruhullah.
The title of the Prophet Jesus, son of Mary. Peace be upon him. So, I'll let you take it from there.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We were discussing these two schools.
Yes.
Which are mutually exclusive.
That's right, the mutually exclusive. This is us back to sets again in
right.
Math. Yes,
exactly.
That's right.
There are two sets, there's no intersection.
No intersection in there, no union of any kind.
Right.
And they're
it's
entirely separate.
This
mutually
or that.
This or that. Yes.
It's mutually exclusive.
Yes. A or.
And one of the schools is the one that you want to be in.
Sure.
Is the school that relies and trusts in the power of God.
Sure.
And the other school, which you don't want to be in, is the school that trusts and relies on the power of other than God.
Sure.
And of course, ultimately we realize there is no power but God's power.
Sure.
But it's this illusion of power that this other side has, whether it's shaitan, taghut, the shaitan and the taghuts of your time, you know, the godfather, the hegemon, whatever word is used and technical term is used and whatever way you want to rationalize it,
sure.
That force, whether it's individual or country or thing, that claims to have power and goes against the path of God.
Sure.
And we said that our problem in the Muslim world is that a lot of Muslims don't really trust in the power of God.
No.
Or rely on God.
Sure.
They pray and they fast and they do all the things that are, you know, on the surface of it are Islamic. And again, I'm including myself in this. Don't
sure.
think I'm talking about other people.
Sure.
But deep down inside in their hearts, they're like, well, it's good if we have a little chat with the Godfather.
Mm.
Just to make sure.
Yes.
He can, you know, protect us.
Yes. Or do something.
Right. And this is in the context of the political and the strategic and the international relations that we see in the Muslim world in the last 150 years, where you have basically people who are good people in their personal life,
sure.
but who insist on trying to live peacefully and happily, you know, by relying on the power and the beneficence of Britain, America, France.
Yes.
Whoever it is that is the...
You're playing ball at the moment.
The current, you current. Know, Godfather.
Godfather, yes.
Instead of God.
God himself.
Right. This brings us to... Come on, Pauline.
No doubt.
Right.
Which is what the program's all about.
Right. And guess which camp he's in?
He's in one with the God. He's
right.
in with God. And in a pretty deep way, I
right.
think.
Yes. And not only is he just there as a... He's like... He's the standard bearer.
He's the standard bearer.
Okay. I mean, everything from the beginning of the revolutionary movement in the 60s, in the 50s and 60s, until the revolution itself, the events of the revolution, the threats, the problems that were happening during the revolution, overthrowing, you know, 2,500 years of absolute monarchy,
yeah.
you know, America's support, you know, Soviet interventions, whatever.
Sure.
So... That whole all those episodes. Then the war itself, you know, all the problems of having the 8-year war, and like you said, you know, the superpowers at the time being united.
United, yes.
Against Iran, you know,
the
only country helping us being Syria.
Hmm.
I keep repeating this because...
Of course.
People should know why we're supporting Syria.
So supporting Syria, yes.
Yes, the only government that helped us.
Yes.
During the war.
That's right.
So we're not going to abandon them.
No.
And that's what friends do, by the way. Not what America does. It abandons its friends.
It does.
Right. We don't abandon our friends.
No.
Right. So, we get to this amazing sentence from Imam, which I'm going to now
please tell us.
And he uttered it and spoke this amazing sentence at the first meeting of the Revolutionary Guards Corps with him.
Right.
And who is the Revolutionary Guards Corps? It's basically the army of the revolution. It's the military force that was established during and after the revolution to guard the revolution.
Sure.
Okay? So it's their first meeting, and the film is famous. If you've been in Iran and you've watched TV in Iran, it's famous. He's standing he's basically they've come to where he's staying.
Yeah.
And I can't recall now whether it was his house or whether it was the Alavi school. I can't recall now. I think it might have been Alavi school. In Tehran, and basically he's standing in the window frame, like the window that's out into the street, and they're all outside in the yard,
right.
And he's speaking to them. It's a very kind of informal get together, and this is the time when, you know, the sanctions are starting. The Americans are sanctioning. The West is sanctioning. Everything's sanctioned.
Sure.
It's all sanctioned.
Yes,
it's all. Well, we're cutting relations.
Of
You're
course.
We're isolating you.
Yeah, yes.
You know, we're going to put pressure on you. We're going to, you know, threaten you with poverty and.
As
and misery.
As Satan does.
Right?
Yes.
So what does Imam say? And I'm translating. This is my translation. I apologize. Because, you know, he says, if the doors of all the nations of the world are closed to us, the doors of divine mercy will be open to us. And people say, oh, this is crazy, and, you know, people can't handle this, and, you know, maybe he was very hardcore. But what about us? We're not like that. We need, you know, this. We need that. And this is the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, who's more hardcore than the Prophet, peace be upon him? Who's more hardcore than Imam Ali, alayhi salam?
Right.
So, obviously, they're teaching us things that, you know, we can't do it in the same level as they can. But we have to do it.
We have to do it
to the level that we're capable.
Yes.
We can't, you know, say that act that reality, deny that reality, which is behind what they're saying to us, which is rely on God, and say, well, I don't have the capacity. Well, okay. Doesn't mean that that reality isn't reality.
Yes, absolutely.
Doesn't mean that if you act on that, you're not going to get the good results. It what it says is, well, you know, raise your capacity. Mm. Work on yourself. This is actually what ends up happening, is saying to the Iranian people, and this has been the result of after 35 years now. 35 years ago, who would have thought that we would be capable of doing all these things? That even if, you know, our benefactor and our, you know, overlord, which was the Americans for 50 years, and then before that the British, if they leave us, everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket. Well, it didn't. And it actually benefited us. We learned to build things. We learned to manage ourselves. We learned, you know, we came out of that slave mentality.
Sure.
And isn't this divine mercy? Isn't this when Imam says the doors of divine mercy are going to open up? Well, isn't this one of the greatest?
This is the thing, isn't it? Because he's basically also giving the message that if we are self-reliant.
Exactly.
And our self-reliance is based on the divine in terms of our trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you'll get a result.
Exactly. And that result is a worldly result.
It's a worldly result.
You will be suffering and, you know, eating, yeah, barley.
Barley, yeah, raw barley or
raw
something.
Raw barley, and then in the next world you'll have your, you know,
your sustenance. 70,
your 72 whatever and all that.
Yeah.
It's about, we can see it today.
Mm.
We were a nation that didn't even produce its own, you know, foodstuffs. It's
that's
basic
right.
Own food. Now we do.
Yes.
And of course, yes. And it doesn't mean that we're cutting off completely from everyone and there's no relations, mm-hmm, and there's no economic trade. Of course, mm-hmm, we still have it. But it's a completely different game when you are self-sufficient.
Exactly.
And you're entering this game with power and with your own capabilities as opposed to being, you know, this weak. You know, there's a concept in economics called bargaining power.
Bargaining power, yes.
Okay, because this is one of the major flaws of the capitalist theoreticians.
Yes.
Is they say, oh, the free market and the market balances itself, and the different economic actors in a market will bargain amongst themselves.
Sure.
And come to some efficient conclusion. Mm. Well, the problem with that is that the different actors in a market have different bargaining powers.
Sure.
If I'm a worker at some factory, you know, how am I supposed to bargain with some large multi-billion-dollar corporation? We can't bargain as equals. We can't even bargain as you know, we're well, it's not even called bargaining.
Yes, no.
It's called you know, enforcing the will of whatever the corporation wants on you as a
exactly
as their wage slave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
So the same concept that I just described exists for nations in the world. We were a nation that all our job was to produce cheap oil for the others, get a pittance for it, and then whatever pittance we got for it, spend it again
on arms.
Give it again to the same guys to get
arms
and their, you know, third rate products that they can't sell on their own market.
Market.
That's the way it was.
Yes.
That's what it meant to have relations with the West.
And they wanted it.
And
that
more
way.
Than that, it meant allowing Western culture to come and destroy the society from its roots.
Of course, of course.
Destroy the
that
families.
That was the other aspect of
destroy
it.
Destroy the families, destroy the,
sure,
the beliefs, destroy all that is good about a nation that has, you know,
an Islamic culture.
5,000 years of civilization and history.
Sure, sure. Absolutely.
So, Imam, at a time, and remember, I mean, I think people who weren't there at that time, they don't realize how sensitive the time was. We just made the revolution. You know, there's internal conflicts brewing. You know, you've got the different terrorist groups being supported by different regimes and countries to cause problems within Iran. A lot of people are scared. Those who are still the old school, you know, relying on the beneficence and you know, mercy of America for us to have a good life. They're scared. They're freaking out. Oh, my God, why are you saying these things? Why are you doing these things?
Mm.
Everything's going to collapse.
Mm.
You know, and, of course, a lot of them left.
Well, of course they did.
And they're good Americans now.
Yes.
And their kids are good American citizens.
Right.
So,
I mean, in other words, you know, there is this stark...
At that time, in a situation like that, Imam says a sentence like this. He says, if all... The doors of all nations are closed to us, the doors of divine mercy will be open to us. He also, although I didn't read it myself, but one of the friends was saying that he said that, you know, if it was up to me, I would just wall in Iran for a couple of years.
And I think you more or less got that with the sanctions,
right? And what's his point? His point is learn to be reliant on yourself and on God. Don't rely on Tawgut.
This is entirely...
Don't rely on Shaitan.
No,
don't
this is entirely
Quranic
teaching.
Don't be scared of Shaitan's threats.
Yes.
Shaitan, you know, when he says that famous sentence in Farsi, which, you know, can't do a damn thing.
America can't do a damn thing. Yes.
It has to do with your heart. Mm. It has to do with the idea of who is it that... Are you a weak person or are you a strong person? Do you have Izzat? Or are you Zalil?
Zalil, yes.
If you follow Imam Hussein and claim to follow Imam Hussein, you can't be Zalil.
No.
Against nobody. How dare you be Zalil? Right? So, we're saying all this in the context that we still have people in the Muslim world whose hopes are pinned to America.
Exactly.
To Britain. To France. If not that, to Russia. To China. To Brazil. To India. On these guys, right?
Sure.
I remember another sentence he said during the war. He says, if you who have God, he was talking about the Iranian people, and he was talking about the war. He said, you Iranian people who have God, what are you scared of?
And people say, oh, that's so simplistic. And it's not simplistic.
I mean, it's
cause and effect.
It's cause and effect.
It's reality.
Let's explain this reality in one hadith, please, because you just reminded me about Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Imam Hussain alayhi salam says that if you have gained Allah, what have you lost? And if you have lost Allah, what have you gained? And this is the teaching that we're trying to instill in ourselves. I mean, you're right. I mean, we're talking to each
ourselves
here.
Of course.
Because what are we as individuals, as men? Do we really have faith or not?
Exactly.
And if we are really Muslim, we really believe in Imam Hussain, we believe in Imam Ali. What do they say? What's that saying I used to hear in Muharram? Live like Ali and die like Hussein? I mean, it's a tall order, isn't it? If you're full of nafaq. I mean, that's the point, isn't it? That if you are going to live up to what the Ahlul Bayt are teaching us, in that in itself, as you say, is both success in this world, although success may not be in terms of all material possessions, because there is a reward that is to be given in the hereafter. Allah doesn't give everything all at once. I mean, this is the thing, this is another thing that our listeners have to be aware of, that in the Quranic teaching, in the teachings of Ahlul Bayt, the people who get the most in this world are those who are cut off from Allah. If you are with Allah, you should be assured of the fact that your success of guarantee, you will get here in this world, of course you will. But Allah will keep some of it for the hereafter. Most of it for the hereafter. You'll get about 20% here,
it's
about
80%. It's something we can't even conceive.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
It's something that you have to understand the context in which you're doing things.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you. And that's what we're trying to explain here, that in terms of what Imam Khomeini was teaching, because he's trying to teach us these teachings that we have forgotten, or perhaps we don't understand
as the way
we should.
You know, it's where the rubber meets the road.
Ah, thank you.
Okay?
I like that.
So
I haven't heard that rubber hit the road for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
It's basically where, okay, all this claim of being religious.
Ah, thank you.
And, you know, doing all the things,
yes,
the prayer,
yes,
and the fasting, and the, you know, whatever.
Yes.
You know, that's where you are really tested, is when you stand up to the Tawgut, and which in our time was America.
Exactly.
Supporting a person, you know, a dictator like the Shah.
Yes.
And then that, you know, big superpower threatening us.
Exactly.
Are you gonna rely on God?
Ah, yes,
are you gonna rely on God?
Are you gonna rely on God?
When you're looking at the superpower and they're like saying, you know what, we're gonna
We're going to bomb you. We're going to bomb you.
Well, it was that.
All options are on the table.
Table. Well, not only options, but it, right after, you know, just a few months after the success of the revolution, there was talk of atom bombs being dropped on Tehran, wasn't there?
And, you know, coup d'etat.
Coup d'etat and all
and,
that.
And, you know, supporting the different, and you know, secessionist movements. What does it mean to be Muslim? It's you rely on God. Your heart is calm in the wildest storm. You know?
Sure.
You have, you know, the Iraqis attacking, Saddam and his, you know, animals attacking, everybody giving them all the weapons they need and the intelligence and satellite photos.
Absolutely.
And everything.
Absolutely. Rumsfeld visiting
and
Saddam with the chemical weapons in return. Right. Now we know it directly came from the United States, wasn't it? It
of
wasn't
course.
Even the German connection, for goodness sake.
I
mean, may Hitler rest in peace, you know. We don't even want to go there, you know.
Right.
But, you know. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that America's atomic and chemical weapons were from the Germans and the Japanese.
Yes.
They basically, the guys who were doing the programs during World War II
were
then, you know, brought first class to the U.S. to continue the program.
To continue those programs, yes. Because, you know, the V-2 improved and sent man
and
to
the chemicals
moon.
Was the Japanese.
Japanese, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So the point is that...
Yeah, absolutely.
So in the end, it was the Germans.
It was the Germans at the end. So there we are, sorry.
Okay. It wasn't even the Americans. They didn't have the skills.
Well, Hitler burned in hell. There you go. So
the point is that, you know... At that time, you have the superpower, and still today, and throughout time, and you know, all times, you have the Talghut, you have the Shayateen threatening you.
Exactly.
And the question is, who do you rely on?
Who do you rely on?
If you say you're Muslim, you got to rely on God.
God, of course.
This is where your test happens. And remember, what does Ahle Kufa do with Imam Hussein?
Exactly.
Precisely the point. They wrote him letters, according to the Rabayat, 19,000 letters they wrote to him, you know, inviting him. And when Muslim comes, with two or three threats by
Ibn Ziyad,
Lanatullah Alayh,
everything's
disappears. And one, you know, public beating and one or two executions.
Everything disappears.
They all dissipate. They all, and not only do they dissipate and go back, crawl back into the hole where they came from. They go and become the army that kills Imam Hussein.
Imam Hussein, yes. Because they had the gold of Ibn Ziyad, didn't they?
Because Ibn Ziyad threatened them?
Yes. But he also bribed them. He also gave them gold.
Well, bribe, threatening, saying, hey, you know, we'll take care of you.
Yeah, take care of you.
You know, if you don't come with us, you will be Zalil.
Yes.
We will kill your men.
Women.
We will
sell off your women.
We'll
take your property.
And if you come with me, here's the cash.
Here's the cash. Sounds pretty like Saudi.
They're all the same. They're all Ibn Ziyad.
This is why my dream
is... You understand what
I know.
They're
I just want to go south.
Right?
You know, I just want to go south.
You understand what Ibn Ziyad means?
Yes, right? I've forgotten. No,
Ibn
I forgot.
Ibn Ziyad? He didn't know who his dad was. So
yes, that's right. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
So, this is what they do.
Sure.
And throughout time, the lesson is, you know, we're not Ahle Kufa.
No. Thank God.
What we say, right?
Yes, that's right. Because
we're not Ahle Kufa.
We are not Ahle Kufa. When the volunteers, the besieged also, you know, went to the war front, they said that we are not Ahle Kufa. Exactly.
We won't abandon.
No, we won't
abandon. We don't
abandon
Islam. We don't abandon truth. We don't abandon our prophet. We don't abandon our imams.
Imam.
We don't abandon justice. Okay, this is what a great man like Imam taught us.
Exactly.
Even if we couldn't get it at that time, either we were too young or we didn't have the
understanding,
or there were so many.
But he was,
influences.
Such a wonderful example.
He comes in very, you know.
I mean, the most.
Without, just with that beautiful way of speaking this very
soft-spoken.
Simple, very simple,
soft-spoken.
But total clarity.
Total clarity.
You know, pure light.
The other thing is that, you know, you say that. But what amazed me at the time when we were seeing all this in